This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is George Newbern, the voice of Superman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam. Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 143 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, and the gentleman that runs our Twitter page, it's Liam. Liam, welcome to episode 143 of the DCAU Review.
That's right, and as the theme song you heard at the beginning of the episode might be informing you, it's the fifth Saturday of the month, and usually what we've started doing when we have that extra week is we pick a trip through the multiverse, if you will, and we arrive at an Elseworlds tale. We are back reviewing yet another episode of Batman, the Brave and the Bold this week. And we've got a big one. We were reviewing Superman all month, and the Man of Steel once again appears here. And he's not alone. It's not just him and Batman this time. We also have Wonder Woman along as well in this week's episode, Triumvirate of Terror.
That is right, Liam. And we have reviewed a handful of episodes so far from Batman, the Brave and the Bold. You can check those out in the archives at DCAUReview.com. Of course, we most famously first covered a Christmas episode a few years ago. That was our first one. We've covered a few guest spots here and there as well, featuring, we had a Captain Marvel episode that we covered. We had
The other one,
yeah. Shazam, I guess, he's more known in the modern age. Well, one of the last episodes that we covered was also a Superman-centric episode in our Elseworlds Superman month last year. So we have already experienced Superman a little bit, and that episode, again, can be heard in the archives. That was a fun one. So definitely looking forward to covering this episode with you today. This episode that we are talking about, if we did not mention the title, is The Triumvirate of Terror. And, man, that's a fun one to say. That originally debuted on the Cartoon Network back on October the 7th, 2011, Liam, meaning we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of this episode as well. Before we get into covering it today, though, I will throw it over to you with our Internet Movie Database official synopsis.
That's right, and this is for the episode Triumvirate of Terror, which was written by Paul Giacoppo, directed by Michael Gogan, with music by the Dynamic Music Partners, and that synopsis reads as such.
After the world's greatest baseball game against the Legion of Doom, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman face off against their arch-enemies, Joker, Lex Luthor, and the Cheetah, who gain the upper hand by switching on their respective opponents.
Okay, yeah, it could have been worded a little bit better, but
switching is a bit ambiguous there. See me after class, IMDb. But so that's basically it's a very, as a lot of these episodes are, and I don't say that as an insult. It's a very simple plot. Mm-hmm. We do as often is the case with these episodes. We have the sort of cold open before the main title sequence, which is its own sort of succinct like 2-minute story, and we get a homage to a very specific classic Silver Age DC comic where the Justice League International plus Robin and Kid Flash are playing baseball against the Legion of Doom. We see characters like Felix Faust, Weather Wizard, Amazo, and several others, and a lot of the main cast of Brave and the Bold. We see a lot like Plastic Man and Aquaman showing up on the heroes side in addition to Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. So we have that quite a bit of fun. We'll probably talk about that more in visuals, but that's a fun little opener there. And then we move on to the main plot, which is, yes, as the synopsis suggests, we get to see some of the camaraderie between the Trinity, as they're known, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, and they're sort of, we open with them briefly foiling their greatest foe's plans for the umpteenth time, which leads to Luthor, Cheetah, and Joker regrouping at the Legion of Doom headquarters. And when we say the, we mean the
That's right.
Legion of Doom headquarters right out of Super Friends. And they decide that the best way to attack our heroes going forward is if they switch it up.
We need a victory, and we need it now!
Oh, face it, Lexi, the axe gone stale. Our respective nemesis know all the punchlines.
Like kryptonite. Can't you do anything creative with it?
I don't need advice from a cut-rate Catwoman.
Crazy thought. Maybe it's time we changed dance partners, You scratch my foe's back, I'll scratch yours?
Yes. If each of us takes on a different hero, it's a whole new game. Advantage us.
Dibs on the swimsuit model.
A mere mortal for a change. But that leaves Cheetah with...
The Man of Steel?
Ha!
Steel or flesh, no man can resist the claws of this cat.
And this time, we bring the battle to them.
And Lex goes after Batman, Joker goes after Wonder Woman, and the Cheetah goes after Superman. And that's kind of the rest of the episode, is just some fights between those characters.
Yeah, it's the episodes that we've covered thus far, there's really not a whole lot of depth that goes into them as far as complicated or maybe life-changing stories that are being told. I know that we've alluded to, and you've had more exposure to this series than I have, admittedly. So I know that there are a few episodes, especially as we get deeper into it, where they decided to go a little bit more serious and have a little bit deeper, more storytelling as opposed to just fun and action and being geared more towards a younger audience or that, you know, maybe 7 to 10 year old audience and sort of branching out beyond that. And with that said, though, there's not a whole lot of depth here. As you said, it's just a fun, goofy homage. And we've talked about it on every episode that we've covered of this. You know, James Tucker literally describes this as a love letter to that Silver Age Batman, you know, the Batman that he grew up loving. And there's certainly homages and tips and nods to the 60s Batman, Batman 66, the Adam West show. In this episode specifically, there's nods and homages to the Linda Carter Wonder Woman series. So there's a lot of that era of superhero before it got serious, before it got gritty, before it got dark, before there were these super, you know, big world-changing stories being told, you know, month to month in the comics or on the screens. So the fact that it is a little bit of a fresh look on things, or there's a little bit of innocence that you get when you watch these, which can be very refreshing, especially based on how a lot of superhero storytelling these days can kind of be laid on top of each other based on how a lot of the stories are told nowadays. But the story continues, as you said. They, you know, Cheetah ends up with being matched up against Superman, the Joker gets matched up against Wonder Woman, and Lex Luthor gets matched up against Batman. There's also this sort of side subplot that there's a time capsule that's being buried to be opened in 50 years in the future, and the Trinity has been asked to supply one item that would define them for a future generation to uncover in 50 years, to sort of define what it means to be them as a hero. So there's this side subplot of them trying to decide what they're going to put into this time capsule to speak to future generations. And that plays into ultimately how Batman, who of course is the hero of this show and is ultimately the one to figure out how he's going to best, despite the fact that it looks like they've all been bested by this sort of villain switch, how he's going to bring them together and sort of best them at the end of the day.
Disgusting.
It's in my palm. See?
I meant the tabletop. It's hideous. Are these cows?
It's not the venue. It's the company.
Double bacon cheeseburger with fries.
Make it two.
I'll have the tuna club on whole wheat and a salad.
Make it three. And shakes all around.
You'll work it off, Princess. Now, have either of you given any thought to the time capsule?
Oh, right. The superhero memorial.
So we give them a personal item, they bury it, and dig it up again in 50 years? Why?
A message to future generations of heroes.
Did you see their suggestions? Your tiara, my cape, Batman's batarang?
Please, as if those things were all that defined us.
Agreed, but then what?
To be continued, I guess. Food's here.
When I'm fighting for the American way, this is what I'm really talking about.
Yeah, that's sort of the, they are, at least it appears, that the villains do get the upper hand and that their plans are working. Joker, with the help of a lot of Joker toxin, is able to incapacitate most of the Amazons on Paradise Island, and even is able to capture Wonder Woman. We have Luthor kind of really beating the tar out of Batman in the Batcave, kind of out-teching him at every turn. And then we have Cheetah using magic and kryptonite to get the best of Superman. And but Batman has the idea that, oh, well, it's, he says, like, I'd rather die here than be disgraced in public, which gives Luthor the idea to bring them all together and try to destroy them on a global stage with cameras and satellites that they just happen to have. Again, another very, like, great homage to the Super Friends, where the Legion of Doom headquarters can just do whatever they needed it to do, depending on the episode.
Time travel, space yes. travel, whatever.
Yeah, can hack into every television, not just on Earth, by the way, because he also broadcasts to several alien worlds as That's well right. with this signal. But of course, yeah, while they begin to argue, the villains begin to argue over who's going to get what city after they've destroyed the heroes, that gives Batman time to free Superman, who frees Wonder Woman, who frees Batman. And then we have another brief fight where the teamwork and camaraderie of the heroes triumphs, and they finally figure out what to put in that time capsule, which we find out 50 years later is the jukebox that was in the diner where we see them having a meal together just before the villains hatch their plot.
There's still one major problem.
The time capsule.
It's the deadline, and none of us have anything to put in it.
I'm sure we'll figure something out.
As we open this time capsule after 50 years, we finally get our answer to the question, what does it mean to be a superhero? Well, that's heroic.
Which I thought was kind of a nice moment, and of course they're all still alive and in attendance at it, and as some giant robots appear to attack the event, wouldn't you know it, they suit back up and we get the adventure continues, if you will, as they continue to ride off, and we'll certainly have more to say about that in visuals as well. There's some cool homages to various other DC properties and creators throughout these episodes. But yeah, like I said, it's not a deep plot, like we've said. It's, you know, bad guys come up with a scheme, they trap the heroes free each other, and they win.
Yeah, which right.
is, and it's okay. It doesn't reinvent the wheel, but that's, you know, not every episode has to. So kind of a weird episode of score, but I settled on a 7 out of 10 for plot.
Man, we've been on the same wavelength this whole year thus far. I also went with a 7 out of 10 for plot. Yeah, it's good, clean fun. I think starting with those cold opens, that's something that sets this whole show apart. You're not going to see too many modern stories of Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman playing baseball against Lex Luthor and the Joker. I mean, that's true. That's just such a weird, zany, and I think you did mention it is based on a comic, which I'm sure is probably available in the DC universe, that being DC Superstars Giant number 10, which came out in 1976, according to the DCA or the Brave and the Bold wiki. So, you know, feel free to check that out. But that's a goofy little self-contained story. But there's even some Easter eggs and some nods in there. You know, Amazo shows up and he's the umpire for the game. And Wonder Woman uses her lasso of truth after he calls her out on a play. And she uses her lasso of truth.
That's
and
a great
he admits
gag, yeah.
He admits that, you know, that she was safe. I thought that was great. Batman has to give the prototypical manager/coach pep talk to his team as they're down to try and rile them up. And he mentions there's a Julie Schwartz and a Frank Miller, Frankie Miller in the crowd watching today. Obviously, two people that had a large influence on James Tucker. Clearly enough for him to give a shout out to both of them in the scripting here. Thought that was funny. But that's something that is just, it is in and of itself. I mean, ironically is a time capsule in and of itself in an era where superheroes would play baseball against supervillains in a comic book. And that was normal accepted storytelling, you know, the goofiness of it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that in and of itself is interesting. I think them setting up this thread that they're trying to figure out what to put into this time capsule, and Batman uses this line as Wonder Woman is talking about the tablecloth being disgusting, and he talks about not where they are, but the company that they're with that is really what matters. And then that, of course, is what ultimately he uses as his strategy to foil the villains, bringing them all together, not where they were, but them being together in the same room. And then that jukebox, of course, symbolizing that them being together is ultimately what mattered. And that's what they wanted to leave as their legacy. So, yeah, there's some cutesy things in there. There's some neat little nods and homages to various different things, a lot of which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in visuals. But storytelling-wise, like you said, it wasn't anything that's going to win an award for being goofy. The idea of villains changing up who they're going to go after, that's interesting. I like that idea.
I always like that. And when you see Batman fight Captain Boomerang or something, you know,
right?
Something,
and then strategizing and figuring out, like, hey, we've tried this a bajillion times and been foiled every single time. What if we changed up and we came at them with things that they weren't used to?
Right. It's a very kind of meta, but not too fourth wall breaking. Of being like, hey, you've lost 5,000 times in a row. Maybe it's time. Maybe this couldn't hurt to give it a shot.
For sure. So, that was certainly welcome. But, overall, it's fun. We talk about that a lot when we review these Brave and the Bold episodes. They're good 22-minute fun episodes. I don't think we've reviewed an episode yet that hasn't left me, like, chuckling or smiling in some sort of cutesy way. Certainly more than this maybe, but it's cutesy and fun enough, and certainly something that you can enjoy while still being simple and understandable.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is probably my favorite category when we're talking about Brave and the Bold episodes. That's going to be visual and animation. So as we've alluded to, lots of things to talk about here. What stood out for you?
So yeah, I think first and foremost, just because she's a character we haven't talked about in this style of animation yet, Wonder Woman's appearance I think is pretty fun. She literally almost, it's like they made her as close to Linda Carter as they could without having to pay Linda Carter for her likeness. Like the hairstyle's a little bit more representative of like the 1940s Wonder Woman, I think, or 1950s Wonder Woman, but very much so, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of a Darwin Cook sort of that New Frontier-esque look, sort of not quite 100% Golden Age based on what she was wearing, but there's some influence in her hair and her tiara.
For sure. So I like seeing that. I think there was like post Justice League Unlimited. I think there was once again like weird rules about how they could and couldn't use Wonder Woman. Because she never actually gets her own solo episode or episode where just her and Batman team up. I think she only appears in one other Brave and the Bold episode, and it's just in one of like the cold open vignettes.
Interesting.
So I think there was limits to how often they could use her, but I think she's stands out. You know, we get all the classic Wonder Woman stuff. We get the lasso, we get the bracelets, we get her throwing the tiara. Like, we get all the classic archetypal Wonder Woman stuff. So it's it's good that they were able to kind of fit all of that in there, probably knowing that this was going to be a limited time deal for them to even get to use this character. And because she is at worst the third most iconic character ever created by DC, it was cool to see her done up in this style and to see her in all her glory, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was not aware that this was one of the few times that she appeared on the show, so that's very interesting that she doesn't make another appearance or doesn't have that opportunity to do more of a solo one-on-one with Batman team up. But yeah, she does a great job here. Getting to go to Themyscira, of course, and mm-hmm. and see her interacting with her mom and the rest of the Amazonians is pretty interesting. Of course, her interaction with Joker, who disguises himself as an Amazonian warrior in order to infiltrate, is pretty funny as well.
Maniake.
Mother, look out!
The Joker.
Well, it ain't Helen of Troy.
No man sets foot on Paradise Island, let alone an insane psychopath.
I am what I am, Wonder Wench, and you're about to be ancient history. So this is how the other half lives. Time to find out how the other half dies.
seeing her in this form is certainly unique, and I appreciate the fact that they did enough to give homages to that same era of Wonder Woman, and certainly Linda Carter, as you mentioned.
For sure. Other than that, we get to see Lex and his classic superpowers. Power armor, a different version, a different take on that same armor that we see him in Justice League and mm-hmm. in the old Super Friends series, as well as, of course, the classic action figure line that kind of spawned a lot of those spin-off Super Friends cartoons. It's cool to see that. And then, this is, as far as Cheetah goes, again, pretty much right out of Super Friends, just sort of updated slightly for the Brave and the Bold style. It's the woman in the costume. It's not the more animalistic versions that we've seen more recently in comics and in live action movies with bad CGI. no offense.
No, I didn't make the movie, none taken.
But it's three very like archetypal classic takes on the big three villains of the episode as well. And like we said, the unique environment of Cheetah attacking Superman in the Fortress of Solitude, Lex Luthor teleporting into the Batcave. We get a brief Alfred appearance, and we get one of our favorite gags, no matter the universe, which is when Alfred dresses up That's as right. Batman or has to pretend that he's Batman.
so good.
Always good. Always good to have a moment like that thrown in there. And
When Lex broke into the Batcave, I was curious because Alfred is carrying his suit around. It's the first time I made a notation also. It's the first time I had seen, first time in any of the episodes that we've reviewed, and that's always the first sort of exposure that I have to this show.
Mm-hmm.
First time you see Bruce Wayne out of costume, and mm-hmm. You commented that he's wearing a very Michael Keaton-esque turtleneck.
Yes.
He does sort of wear that same turtleneck, I think, in the new Batman Adventures also.
Yeah, I think that's his non-suit look.
Yeah, his non-suit look, his more casual look is that sort of turtleneck with those pants style too. So maybe a little nod to both of those appearances. Mm-hmm. But regardless, we get Bruce out of costume and Alfred in costume, which is great until Bruce can find his suit and put it on as he's trying to evade giving his secret away to Lex. In that same scene, each of those scenes where the villains are taking on their new adversaries, I think they did that really well. I already mentioned the scene with Wonder Woman and Joker, and then mm-hmm. of course there is some visual CGI that's used for this as Batman is battling Luthor in the Batcave. He turns the Batmobile into the Batmech suit sort of robot thing that Luthor quickly sort of does away with. But that was my first time seeing that. And then
the Whirly Bat.
Say we get the Whirly Bat gets an appearance at the beginning as the Joker is launching a pie at Batman and Vicky Vale. And so we get to see the Whirly Bat make an appearance again. And then there's some more CGI. I think in maybe the Fortress of Solitude scene or maybe the Themyscira scene. I can't remember which one.
But yeah, I think there's a little bit when the satellite dishes and stuff come out too.
There you go.
But yeah, that's definitely, I think, the most fun is, yeah, seeing these different villain encounters. And Joker uses pretty much like every like gag Joker weapon we've ever seen, from rubber chickens to laughing gas to the playing cards to near the end of the episode, he pulls out a laughing fish and swings it at Batman. So you get kind of all like
gas
like,
flowers.
Absolutely, yeah. All of the classic Joker weapons as well. And Cheetah really just like, we get to see her. She slices Superman up. No red to indicate blood, but slices up Superman's costume. And then later when Lex is teleporting them all away, it's like he has Batman captured, Joker's about to hit Wonder Woman with a hammer, and then they teleport, and then we cut to Superman and Cheetah has, like, her claws dug into Superman's eyes. Like,
she mentions that that's kryptonite the most, tip, too.
Yeah, so that's, like, the most, that's probably actually the most violent of the three supervillain encounters we get in this episode.
Sorry, big boy. Your message in a bottle will have to wait forever.
How did you...
This charming little bauble. The amulet of Urs Kartaga channels the full mystic powers of my feline namesake. Magic, Superman. Something to which you are particularly vulnerable.
Impressive. But you still won't win. So you might as well surrender now!
Kryptonite-laced nail polish. Isn't it too divine? Under all that steel, just a man. Claim my prize.
Yeah, she handled Superman okay, surprisingly.
Yeah.
She talks about, she has an amulet that's magic, which of course she talks about Superman being mm-hmm. vulnerable to, which I think was more of a, tended to be more of a Silver Age trope as well. I guess there's some use of it in modern as well.
But, for sure.
Certainly something that Superman is more vulnerable to than just straight up fisticuffs. So that lended to that. And then, of course, we already mentioned the Luthor and Batman battle in the Batcave. But the culmination, of course, we mentioned the Legion of Doom headquarters, of course, being an homage as well. There's a lot of winks and nods here. Even the final scene as the heroes are there 50 years in the future to witness the opening of this time capsule is there's a cameo by a character that I, Liam, admittedly had never heard of. You had heard of him once we pointed it out. But that being the Prez, which
Prez,
was
with a Z.
With a Z. And Prez was a shortly lived comic from 1973 to 1974, as we learn, starring fictional character Prez Ricard, or Rickard, depending on how you look at that last name. But that's one character created by Joe Simon and Jerry Grandinetti, and that was one that I had admittedly, being a DC fan my entire life, yeah, that's not one that even made it into some of these like weird DC action figure series that went so deep into the roster. I don't think he ever got a DC Direct figure ever made either. That's how sort of like way out there this character is.
Yeah, there was a more recent like rebooted version of this that mm-hmm. came out as part of DC had an imprint called Young Animal
mm-hmm.
That involved like a Doom Patrol series and a few others, and Prez was one of the series in that line. I don't think it was particularly successful this time around either. But yeah, we talk about some deep cuts that they throw in these various series. But that might be the deepest cut I think we've ever talked about on this episode, is a Prez cameo. Keeping in mind that this cartoon was made before whatever that reboot was, so this is literally just referencing that series from the 70s that was pretty short-lived. So
holy obscurities, Batman.
A deep cut, but yeah. Yeah, we have a lot of other cameos, as we mentioned, in that baseball scene. We have Aquaman, Booster Gold, Green Arrow, Kid Flash, Plastic Man, and Robin, as well as Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And, of course, on the villain side, we have Felix Faust, Amazo, as you mentioned, the umpire of the scene, and actually probably the most active member of the Legion of Doom's team is the Weather Wizard, who keeps freezing the balls as they're about to leave the stadium there.
Yeah, that was pretty cute, and just another one of those characters that was included there that didn't necessarily have to be included, but, you know, got a little bit of a chuckle out of me.
Absolutely, as well as you mentioned, Vicky Vale, and Steve Trevor also making minor cameo appearances there. So yeah, to wrap it all up here, to put a bow on it, it is so much fun. I had a lot of fun with the visuals in this episode, and I actually gave it a very strong 9 out of 10.
Nice. I love this look. I think every time we've done an episode of this, I just guffaw over the visuals for this. It's so fun.
Yeah.
It's fun playing in this universe. They have a lot of fun doing so. And, you know, I ended up giving visuals a perfect 10 out of 10 for that.
Nice.
It's really fun. I love the style. I love the artwork. I love the way that it's drawn. The characters, as we said, this having a new character in Wonder Woman, the returning Superman. I even like the details. Just appreciating the details going through this episode. Even though we had already covered an episode that featured Superman, but him having the S on the back of the cape, mm-hmm. and just some of those squinting eyes. Yeah, those little touches that, you know, you don't have to do, but they did as this homage to this era, is just so welcome and makes you feel sort of like right at home and warm and fuzzy. So mm-hmm. I really, really, really enjoy the visuals for this show. So, and that Alfred cameo, that Alfred as Batman,
yes.
is another perfect homage to Batman 66 or any of the other times that it's popped up. But love that.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our category of music as we talk about that today. As we've talked about before in the past, and as you sort of alluded to, this the music tends to be done by the Dynamic Music Partners, of course. Mm-hmm. It tends to be more of an homage to that Batman 66 era, but you also pointed out there's even some musical cues this week towards that Linda Carter Wonder Woman.
Yeah, the main title theme of the Wonder Woman 1977 series is used, complete with, I know you're not a big fan of lyrics in your cartoon music, Cal, but here we have complete with the choir of women singing Wonder Woman over and over again.
Got me there.
But that, I mean, that's, again, like we said, because that's such an homage to that era, it feels very appropriate to have that there. And yeah, other than that, we don't, I didn't have a lot of musical notes. Again, you get your very dramatic music. I think the music in the cave fight between Luthor and Batman stood out to me as pretty darn good as far as adding to that tension and the excitement, kind of picking up the tempo as the scene got more escalated as it went. So definitely some good stuff. Definitely Wonder Woman was the standout theme for me, obviously. And I gave music a solid 6 out of 10.
Nice. I went just a tick higher. I went 7 out of 10. I would say it is a lot of filler, a lot of background music. I think that the final fight between all of the heroes and villains really culminates and really pays straight up homage to Batman 66 with the... Yes. With a sort of guitar driven, mm-hmm. it's not a straight up version of that Batman 66 fight theme that mm-hmm. everybody knows and can sing and hum, but it's an homage to it. It's poetic. It rhymes.
Yes,
it's poetry. it's definitely clearly what they're going for with it. So I really enjoyed that. That sort of popped me for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. a lot. So, not a whole lot musically otherwise to note. There was some music, of course, that played in the opening, the cold open also during the baseball game.
Yes.
That added to that as well. Of course, the Dynamic Music Partners are, you know, the big three from,
right.
or the surviving big three from that that original run of DCAU cartoons. So when you get the Trinity, if you will, of composing for these DC superhero cartoons. So it's no surprise that we both really enjoy the music.
Absolutely.
All right, ma'am. Let's move on to our final category of the day, which is going to be voice acting. Let's talk about this week's cast and who our players are.
Yeah, we have a pretty big cast here. I'll hit on some of the bigger ones here. As we mentioned, him in his brief appearance is quite entertaining. James Garrett as Alfred, who also went on to voice Alfred in numerous direct-to-DVD Batman animated films, who happen to be produced by James Tucker. I'm guessing that's not a coincidence.
Not a coincidence.
He does a good job. Obviously, it's we've talked about this 100 times. It's weird to not have anyone besides Ephraim Zembalist Jr. Voicing him. It's always going to sound a little weird at first, but I think he does a nice job, and it was cool to see Alfred included in this episode.
Are you sure this is the right approach, Master Bruce?
Of course, Alfred. By feeding all the requirements of the time capsule ceremony into the Bat Computer, length of time, posterity, heroics, it'll tell me the perfect item to donate. A Batarang.
Genius. And you are officially late for your dinner with Miss Vale. Will you have any further need for me then, sir?
That will be all for tonight, Alfred.
Our tracking devices worked as planned, leading us straight to our enemies. Caught with your trunks down, Dark Knight? Hair black, muscular frame. Who are you?
Did you come here to fight me, Luthor, or my janitor? Oh, dear.
Good job, Alfred. I've got it from here.
Bash that bald blighter.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's never the same thing as Ephraim Zembalist Jr., but for this version of this character, it works out perfectly. You know, there wasn't anything that took away from this character or distracted me.
Absolutely. We also have, playing Hippolyta, we have Tippi Hedren, who folks might know from Alfred Hitchcock films of the 60s, like The Birds.
Crazy.
A legendary actress. And here she is in a minor role, playing Wonder Woman's mother here. But I saw that name and I was like, that sounds kind of familiar. Why do I know that? And then, yep, sure enough, she was in a couple different Hitchcock films as well. So she does a nice job there. It was fun to see that. We have Roger Rose as Superman, who I think we talked quite a bit about in his previous appearance in Brave and the Bold that we talked about back in the archives. But he is pretty much the perfect, like, 50s Superman voice.
Oh, yeah, he's really, really good. There's a touch of familiarity, too. It doesn't feel like, you know, it's weird because we've talked about, obviously, there's two DCAU Superman mm-hmm. voices, and we've talked back and forth about whether we're more of a Tim Daly guy or not, or a George Newbern guy. And, you know, this Superman voice, while not being either of them, I think is in the same ballpark as them, though, mm-hmm. But with that, like, innocent, like, 40s, 50s Superman twist to it.
Yes. When they're in the diner and he says, when I'm talking about fighting for the American way, and he holds up a cheeseburger and a big milkshake, he goes, this is what I'm talking about, and then takes a big bite of the cheeseburger. It's like, that's such a cheesy thing, but it's perfect for, like, Superman. I think, I forget who it was, it may have been Tom King or someone once said, like, there's no such thing as too cheesy for Superman.
Right.
And I think, especially when you're in this 50s, 60s, Silver Age homage era, like, there's really nothing that you can't say as Superman that He's like, yep, that's Superman. Like, right. That still feels right, as corny and silly as that line is. He delivers it greatly.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah, that's it's done really, really well. He's not out of place as Superman. And definitely, if he hasn't had the opportunity to voice Superman in other outlets, should definitely be given the chance if there are other opportunities out there, because I think he does a great job.
Yeah, it would be interesting to hear him in a more modern Superman tape, yeah. See what he would do with
a little
it
more,
there.
A little more serious mm-hmm. edge to it. Absolutely.
And from there, of course, we have Vicki Lewis playing Wonder Woman, who folks might know from Finding Nemo or some of her, a lot of her other voice acting work over the years. She's good. I was honestly, like, it's no one's fault, but when I heard the Wonder Woman theme, I thought, why didn't they just get Linda Carter to voice her?
Right.
Like, again, other than that, you know, maybe they didn't want to pay for Linda Carter, but like,
right.
But that's not Ms. Lewis's fault. She does a fine job as Wonder Woman again, very archetypal, heroic, Silver Age superhero voice, but she does a good job.
Yeah. She doesn't have a lot of dialogue. Yeah. Her interaction with Superman and Batman in the diner is she's sort of like trying to order a salad and like try to be health
Superman
conscious.
Superman mansplains to her. That's not the right term, but he orders for her, which yeah. is very unchivalrous.
Yes, and then Batman is the one who mansplains.
That's
He's
right.
the one who says that she's going to work it off by fighting crime or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah, that was a tongue-in-cheek nod to that sort of, you know, misogynistic yes. era.
To the era when she was the secretary of the Justice Society.
Oy vey. Well, we've come a long way.
For sure.
She
for
now
sure.
anchors, pretty much solely anchors the DC live-action movie.
Absolutely.
But yeah,
the turntables have in fact turned.
Yes, 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 how they have. But yeah, who else do we have? Obviously, we have Jeff Glenn Bennett, who's making a return as the Joker, who I just desperately want to be the voice of Plankton, apparently, because every time I hear him, I'm like, oh, it's the guy that voiced Plankton on SpongeBob, and it's like, nope, still not.
No.
Still Johnny Bravo, still Dexter's dad.
Absolutely, yeah. Legendary voice actor, but just not for that particular voice, despite your best efforts to will that into existence.
Apparently
so. It's going to be a Mandela effect thing with that.
Apparently,
with you,
yeah.
Probably for the rest of the time we
for sure.
review episodes with the Joker in them, but yeah. He does a solid job. Like I said, I think the highlight, as we've talked about in other categories, is that scene where he goes to confront Wonder Woman, and he's first. It's mostly a visual gag of him in this veil, like tiptoeing around, like walking very daintily as he's gassing all the Amazons, and then when he pulls off the hood and starts to attack Wonder Woman, he's pretty darn good as well in this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a different Joker. We've talked about that before. It's mm-hmm. It's not like any other Joker performance, and it's not, I don't know, it doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't always come off like a Joker as opposed to just, it's a cartoon villain mm-hmm. voice, I guess maybe, which is why I want him to be Plankton, because it's more of that cartoon, like, over-the-top villain as opposed to a maniacal clown. So I feel like, I mean, I love his performance, but it's missing something as far as a Joker performance for me is concerned, mm-hmm. but he's fine. Like he's yeah. fine. He's fine in that role.
He does a good job. And then of course we have Kevin Michael Richardson as Lex Luthor.
Speaking of the Joker.
That's right. Speaking of the Batman,
yeah.
Of course played the Joker in that series and has done tons of other, voice acting work, he's a pretty great Lex Luthor. Like, again, it's we're the DCAU review, so we're going to... They have the unfortunate problem of being compared to Clancy Brown and Mark Hamill and Ephraim Zimbalist and all these people that we've already mentioned. And
right.
Susan Eisenberg and all these tremendous voice actors. But I think he does a really good job. He probably, of the villains, has the most to do because he's the one that actually, like, hatches the plot. And
I was going
to
say, he probably... I feel like he has the majority of the dialogue in the mm-hmm. episode.
Well, he's also the only... I think the only villain who talks in the baseball sequence as well. So he's
yeah.
probably called on more than any of the other actors in this episode. And he does a fun job, especially, I think again that sequence in the Batcave with him playing off of Diedrich Bader as Batman is really quite fun
for a thick Lex Luthor with two C's.
That's right.
I think we talked about it in the other Superman episode that we covered. It's a different take on Lex. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's it's more of the, like, mad scientist, straight-up supervillain, as opposed to the, you know, the undercover businessman that's just kind of, like, sneakily evil, or less overtly evil.
Right.
So it's, it for this tone of this cartoon and for the type of Lex Luthor character he's playing, I think he does a great job.
Absolutely. And then I saved her for last because she's probably the most known name in this cast. Playing the cheetah this week, Morena Baccarin, who folks might know from the Deadpool movies, as well as Gotham. She plays Dr. Leslie Tompkins on Gotham, so there's another DC connection for you.
For sure.
Tons of other... Have we talked about her once before? I feel like she may have been a voice actor in something else.
I don't know.
There's been 140 some of these folks. I feel like I've brought her name up before.
Probably. But, it's possible. But yeah,
or it could have just been us talking, because we also talk about comics and cartoons when we're not recording the podcast.
Good point. Yeah. Yeah. No, she does a great job. I did not know that was her. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, she's pretty... I mean, she does... her character... I feel like we definitely have talked about it, because I feel like we've talked about her character on Gotham, which I watched up until... I don't think I ever watched the last season, but I was pretty faithful in watching that in the first couple seasons. And her character portrayal of Leslie Tompkins is definitely very different than what we got in Batman the Animated Series, or typically or is portrayed in the comics. So for her portrayal is definitely different, but she has a good voice acting voice. She definitely has a voice for voice acting, and she does a great job portraying Cheetah. I didn't find anything offensive about it, and actually pleasantly surprised that was her.
And just so people don't yell at me, she voices the Black Canary on Justice League Unlimited, which I don't think we've actually reviewed an episode with her in it yet.
Correct.
But just so we don't get yelled at.
I think we've talked about her when we've talked about Leslie Tompkins on...
That's probably it.
On Appointment in Crime Alley.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But regardless, yeah, I think she does a very good job as Cheetah here, playing off, as we mentioned, she gets to play off Superman more probably than her classic rival of Wonder Woman here. And of course, as I briefly mentioned, we of course have Diedrich Bader as Batman of this show. We'll say it every time we review an episode. He's perfect for this Batman. From his line when he and Vicky are tied to the giant platter as Joker's about to throw a giant pie at them, and he tells her that he hopes this doesn't scare Vicky off from a career in journalism, because it's still a very promising field.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we present a modern twist on a true clown classic, a staple of Harlequin humor. Our unwilling participant, the Dark Knight himself. And a surprise guest, a nosy reporter who got a little too close to her story.
I hope this doesn't dissuade you from a life of journalism, Miss Vale. It's still a noble calling.
he does a fantastic job in this episode again and again, him playing off of Kevin Michael Richardson as well as Vicky Lewis and Roger Rose, I think is all very, very fun, and a good time was had by all.
Yeah, they do it great. He fits this version of this Batman very well. Even though, as we always say, as a DCU AU podcast, we'll always see Kevin Conroy as Batman. This for this characterization of Batman, a great casting, and he does a great job.
Absolutely. And for all those reasons, Cal, I have given voice acting a perfect 10 out of 10.
Nice. I went just a tick lower. I went 8 out of 10. I think Kevin Michael Richardson does the lion's share of carrying, as I mentioned here. But overall, I didn't think there was a lot. There wasn't a lot needed as far as dialogue. It's a lot of action sequences. It's a lot of visual gags. It's a lot of punching and, you know, happening in the bat, yes, like the fisticuffs, as opposed to the need for dialogue. So there wasn't anything to me that blew me away as far as like, hey, this is really, really good performance. So that's why I gave it just a little tick lower.
There you go.
So let's total up our scores, Lance. Oh,
oh,
oh, that's a sound. That means
a bonus point has just been given, and it's not me this time, Cal, so that must mean it's you.
It is indeed, Liam. So my bonus point is for something we didn't mention in visuals, or at least I intentionally didn't mention in visuals, and that is in that final scene, we get a flash forward 50 years into the future as they are opening up this time capsule, as we said, and the character of Prez Rickard is opening up the time capsule. And we get three people in the crowd that happen to be watching and looking on, who, of course, certainly resemble three people that we know, one being, of course, Clark Kent, one, of course, Diana.
But he wears glasses, and Superman doesn't wear glasses, it's true. So we can't be sure it was
He's also
guy.
Got a little bit of graying at the temples.
Yeah.
And then you have a gray-streaked hair woman that looks a little bit like Wonder Woman. And then you have a guy in a wheelchair. It's a little bit old and crusty. And what did you know? As soon as they open this time capsule and bring out the jukebox, there is a attack from some aliens. And springing into action, headed to his phone booth, Clark Kent comes out dressed as Superman. Diana does her spin, another homage to that Wonder Woman 77, the great Linda Carter television program. And then Batman, who bears a passing resemblance to a Kingdom Come Bruce Wayne drawing homage. His wheelchair transforms into a mech suit that greatly resembles the Kingdom Come drawings, which have a soft spot, if we haven't mentioned it here before, a huge soft spot for the Kingdom Come storyline, that graphic novel.
You take the one on the left. I'll take the right.
Works for me.
You coming or what?
Wouldn't miss it.
Alex Ross, just a brilliant artist. Mm-hmm. Mark Waid, just tremendous writer for that. The combination of those two together, writing that story and the artwork with it, is just something that is one of my favorite graphic novels of all time. So I had to give a little bit of extra juice to this one. As a special nod to that Kingdom Come. I would have loved it if they had given Superman his complete Kingdom Come costume, or maybe Wonder
the black under the S,
and then Wonder Woman maybe with her golden armor or something like that. That would have been like the icing on the cake. But I'll take just Batman in his Kingdom Come mech suit instead, because that's one of my favorite Batman designs of all time. So absolutely loved that, and a great little wink and nod there at the end to that Kingdom Come storyline.
Love it.
All right, Liam. So, totaling everything up here, Liam, I end up with a very respectable 33 out of 40. What about you?
And I am just one notch lower on the scale there, Cal, with a final score of 32 out of 40.
All right. These episodes continue to be pretty high ranked on our scoring system here. I guess it comes down to rewatchability, Liam, as we talk about this one. It's hard because I haven't watched the entirety of this series. This one doesn't necessarily feel, other than it being maybe the only Wonder Woman appearance, it doesn't feel like it's too integral to the actual series itself. But it is fun. Mm-hmm. You have a Lex Luthor, Joker, Cheetah team up, and a Trinity team up. So what do you say?
Yeah, I would give this one thumb up for rewatchability, just because it is the only full episode appearance of Wonder Woman that we get in this series, and one of the only Trinity adventures in animation up to this point, too.
That's a good point.
Didn't have a ton of those where it was just the three of them in Justice League or JLU. So,
and those episodes that they did, we really loved so far.
Absolutely.
And have been some of the highest ranked episodes.
Absolutely. So definitely, I would give this one thumb up for rewatchability.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Again, not having seen the entirety of this series, it doesn't seem like there are too many episodes that you're going to be like, this is a must-watch and you have to watch this one because it's integral. Because there's not a lot of overarching, at least in the episodes that we've seen, right. Stories that carry. I know, I think that's something they do later on in the final season.
For sure. There's like a more established homage to like the Justice League International team of the 90s and things like that, where they actually do build on some of their characters there and form like an official group. But yeah, as you could pretty much, and that's I think one of the great things about the show, is whether you're watching it as an adult or you're watching it with your kids, you can kind of just pick an episode and you know you'll have a pretty good time with it.
Absolutely, yeah, and this is one that you can watch no matter what age you are, which is great about
absolutely.
This. And certainly pull something out of it. You know, kids probably aren't going to get half of the Easter eggs and the homages to those old comic books series or shows like adults will. Across all ages. That's one of the things that this Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon does really, really well, is appeals to people of all ages.
Absolutely.
In a different way than the DCAU, though.
For sure.
All right, Liam. Well, that will bring us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, you can follow us on social media at DCAU Review. Check out our Instagram. Follow us on there. We post clips from upcoming episodes. We let you know when the new episodes are posted. We do lots of fun stuff on there. We also have a presence on Twitter. Liam runs our Twitter page, so you can follow us at DCAU Review on there as well. We talk about it all the time, but Liam always will drop a few days earlier than we announce on this episode what we'll be covering for the future. So Liam, with that being said, what are we covering for the new month of February, which starts next week?
Well, it's funny, Cal, because you mentioned that that flash-forward sequence where we see the superheroes in the future. Now, would you say that that sequence took place 50 years from now, whenever now is?
Well, it definitely takes 50 years. It's definitely 50 years in the future by what their dialogue was. So.
Absolutely. And that is exactly where we'll be heading, back into the future of Gotham City.
The future, Liam?
That's right. All the way to the year 2000. 50 years from now, whenever now is, as we return, first time in quite a while we have entered that space, we'll be heading back to the future to cover more episodes of Batman Beyond in February.
All right, we're very excited about that, and we are kicking off with the episode
Final Cut.
Awesome.
Yes, the return of Curare, which is, as we talked about, the very unique villains and rogues gallery that Terry has to contend with in that series. Always a lot of fun, so exciting to get back into that world and to experience it with another memorable episode next week.
Absolutely. Don't forget, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, wherever that is, Google, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Pretty much anywhere else you can find your podcasts, you can find us. You can also, if you want to support the podcast, check out our store. It's at the top of the page. Head over to dcaureview.com. Click on the store tab. Pick yourself up a shirt, a hat, a mug, a sweatshirt, something. We don't do ads on here because we don't like them. So if you want to support us and you like what we're doing, you can buy one of those items. And then send us a pic. Tweet us a pic. Instagram us a pic of you wearing your gear. We'd love to see that in action. But I am excited to head back to the future next week. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Farewell.